Dr. Taco holds degrees in animal science, endocrinology, and physiology nutrigenomics. He's a research physiologist with the USDA ARS. His research focuses on various aspects of trace mineral deficiencies, emphasizing molecular, physiological, and nutritional factors, and practices that influence the intestinal micronutrient absorption. He leads a research team focused on understanding the interactions between dietary factors, physiological and molecular biomarkers, the microbiome, and intestinal functionality. His research accomplishments include the development of the Gallus-Gallus intra-amniotic administration procedure and establishing recognized approaches for using animal models within mineral bioavailability and intestinal absorption screening processes. He has also developed, and this is I think what he's talking about today, a zinc status physiological blood biomarker and molecular tissue biomarkers to assess the effect of dietary mineral deficiencies on intestinal functionality and how micronutrient dietary deficiencies alter gut microbiota composition and function.
Thank you, Mary. I'm very excited to be here today and would like to thank the organizers for the invitation to speak here today. So as Mary mentioned, I will discuss today some of the innovative approaches that we use to study dietary zinc bioavailability, absorption, and deficiency status. So we all heard about the prevalence of dietary iron deficiency. In fact, dietary iron deficiency is the most common micronutrient deficiency in the world. However, zinc deficiency usually goes hand in hand with iron deficiency and approximately is affecting 20% of the world's population. Zinc deficiency is associated with poor growth, depressed immune function, adverse outcomes of pregnancy, and it was associated to early childhood morbidity and mortality. So we're all aware that in the target population, we try to seek innovative solutions for better health. When it comes to poor nutrition, primarily iron and zinc deficiencies are identified as one of the major global health problems to be addressed. As the problem is low bioavailability from plant or grain-based diets that are low in absorbable iron and zinc, one of the strategies to battle this problem is biofortification, as the goal is to create a full range of optimal bioavailable nutrients in a single staple plant species. Our research is focusing the development of screening tools and biomarkers for iron and zinc bioavailability and status, and by that to guide the plant breeding process. Hence, the focus of my presentation today would be to discuss the models that are used, primarily the in vivo model. I will give some examples of some of our recent in vivo screening, and we'll discuss the physiological, molecular, and microbial biomarkers that we use as part of the development of a zinc deficiency index. So we heard from Ray about the screening for iron bioavailability, and by using the two-step system where we initially screen for hundreds of samples for iron bioavailability by measuring ferritin formation and then choosing the most promising line to be assessed in vivo in our animal model, and this is preferably done prior to human efficacy studies. So in terms of the animal model that we use, previously the rodent model and pig model were very common. However, in recent years we're able to establish the Gallus-Gallus as a very relevant model for iron bioavailability and status. One of the major advantages is that we're able to use both the embryonic stage and the adult phase, and we're able to show that this model exhibits the appropriate responses to iron deficiency, and it can serve as a model for iron and other mineral like zinc bioavailability and absorption. It is a fast-growing animal. It is sensitive for dietary mineral deficiencies. Its growth period of 4 to 6 weeks is optimal for our needs. It's very easy to manipulate its diet, which is very hard to do with other species. It is a very cost-effective animal model as an in vivo bioavailability screening tool. There is a broad spectrum of biomarkers that reflect iron and zinc status bioavailability and absorption that I will discuss shortly in the context of zinc. And there is at least 85% homology between gene sequences of human and chicken intestinal DMT1, D-site B, ZNT1, and ferroportin, and others which are all relevant to iron and zinc metabolism. Also, there is a considerable similarity at the phylum level between gut microbiota of broilers and humans with representation of the four dominant bacterial phyla in both. So as Ray mentioned recently, we're able to show and establish the two-step approach to demonstrate iron bioavailability. And all of the four studies that we have conducted, and by using staple food crops, iron biofortified staple food crops, were in agreement with the parallel human efficacy studies that were conducted with the same lines. So once we were able to establish the work with iron, we moved forward to zinc. And considering the complexity and sophistication of zinc deficiency, the challenge is to assess marginal zinc status. Current biomarkers that are used are urine serum and hair zinc concentrations. All of them were shown to be not reliable as they're not stable. For example, serum zinc concentration that is a very commonly used biomarker is affected by factors like inflammation. Hence, there is no universally accepted single measure to assess zinc status. And the need to develop additional and robust indicators of zinc status and further expand the already known clinical markers for which limited data of reliability exists is evident. This was released by the World Health Organization. Hence, the strategy is try to develop a zinc deficiency index that will consist on three different factors: the expression of relevant proteins, the microbial population in the fecal sample or intestinal content samples, and the potentially new and novel blood biomarker, the LA2-DGL ratio, that I will discuss shortly. All of this, the overall goal is to try and improve zinc dietary bioavailability and biofortification outcomes. So when it comes to the LA2-DGL ratio, we try to find a biomarker that we can measure in a tissue that is easy to collect, primarily the blood sample, where we focus in conversion processes of long-chain fatty acids that take place in the red blood cell membrane, primarily the conversion of linoleic acid to gamma-linolenic acid, or LA2-DGLA, that is controlled by delta-6 desaturase, which is an enzyme that is completely zinc-dependent. Hence, the hypothesis was that under zinc deficiency condition, this enzyme is not going to function and this ratio is going to increase. And we can potentially use this biomarker as a biomarker of zinc status. With that, we moved forward with an in vivo assessment, and by using purified diets, the reason was that we wanted to make sure that the only difference between the two diets, adequate and zinc deficient, is zinc concentration. And indeed, as you can see at the bottom, the difference or the zinc concentration was 42.3 and 2.5 in the adequate and the zinc deficient diet, respectively. We also measured the concentration of long chain fatty acids in the diet just to confirm that we don't have any differences on that level. And with that, we moved forward to a 4-week feeding trial to assess our hypothesis. We collected relevant samples on a daily, weekly, and then in the end, tissue samples for further gene expression analysis. And as you can see, with the serum zinc concentration, which is the more acceptable biomarker, clearly we're able to create two different populations, one of them with an improved zinc status relative to the other. Again, this is a controlled study. At the end of the study, when we looked into the expression of a spectrum of different enzymes, there were significant differences, including the expression of delta-6 desaturase that was downregulated in the zinc-deficient group. Again, the enzymes that convert LA into DGLA. And indeed, when we looked into this ratio throughout the study, we had significant differences starting at day 7 of the study with an increased ratio in the zinc-deficient group. This was maintained throughout the study, and the cumulative differences in ratio at the end of the study, again, significant increase in the zinc deficient group due to the lack of activity of delta-6 desaturase. So with this study, we're also interested to learn more about how micronutrient deficiencies, in this case zinc deficiency, alter the intestinal microbial population and function, and to perhaps use the microbiome as an indicator of zinc deficiency status and severity. We use next-generation sequencing techniques, and again, to assess the microbial profile, the first step was to conduct alpha diversity analysis, which is an indicator of microbial diversity differences between the two populations that we had here. And as you can see, the zinc adequate group in blue here is by far or significantly more biodiversified relative to the zinc deficient group. And this basically suggests that this population is healthier. The next analysis was beta diversity that measures how similar subjects are between within treatment groups and in terms of their bacterial populations. And as you can see, we have a clustered population in the zinc adequate group relative to the zinc deficient group that shows no cluster. And no cluster pattern is associated with a physiological problem. It was previously associated with diabetes, obesity, and heart disease, meaning that, again, in this case, the problem is zinc deficiency. Further, when we looked into the analysis at the species level, we were able to demonstrate that the profile is completely different, including being able to create specific ratios, for example, between firmicutes and proteobacteria, that this ratio is significantly higher in the zinc deficient group relative to the zinc adequate group, and to potentially use that as a biomarker of a zinc status and severity of deficiency. And with that, to associate between a specific species and zinc status. So for example, Enterococcus sp is very much associated with dietary zinc adequacy versus Clostridium dose that is not. And then in the middle, there is a spectrum of other species that again can indicate on the severity of the deficiency. Further, we were interested to ran our profiles against the KEG microbial metabolic pathway database that basically is the database that tells us, based on a microbial profile, what else we can expect from the specific profile that we're able to demonstrate in a specific study. And we're able to identify 12 different physiological, molecular, and other profiles that are downregulated in the zinc deficient group relative to the zinc adequate group, including processes that are associated with carbohydrate digestion and absorption, which is an indicator of a reduction of microbial activity in the zinc deficient group. This was associated with the short chain fatty and acid analysis in our samples that, again, were able to demonstrate that acetate and hexonate concentrations were lower in the zinc deficient group relative to the adequate, again suggesting that we have a lower microbial activity in the zinc deficient group, which again is, it's not a desirable effect. So just to conclude this part of our initial validation of this approach, it appears that the host zinc deficiency status is affecting on the microbial richness and diversity, which again will indirectly will lower intestinal functionality and gastrointestinal health, which will further contribute to the lower zinc status of the host. Further, it looks that zinc deficiency is lowering the carbohydrate digestion and fermentation processes, as was indicated with a reduction of short-chain fatty acid production in the intestinal lumen, which will lower zinc solubility and will further contribute to the lower zinc status of the subject. So the approach of using these three factors as part of a zinc deficiency index will allow us to perhaps use that as an indicator of zinc status, primarily in the context of moderate to severe deficiency, will allow us to learn more about the zinc nutrition in the target population, and as the overall goal is to improve zinc biofortification outcomes. Recently, the LA to DGLA ratio biomarker was validated in human populations. The results indicated that there were statistically significant differences in DGLA status and the LA to DGLA ratio between the zinc-formed group. This was a human recall study. The authors concluded that the results are encouraging as they show that concentration of DGLA is decreased and the LA to DGLA ratio increased in people with lower dietary zinc intake. So this was very encouraging for us, and we chose to move forward and to test our approach by using a zinc biofortified staple food crop. In this case, it was zinc biofortified wheat that was developed with Dr. James Tangoulis. James provided us with a wheat flour of the biofortified wheat flour line in comparison to a control line, and the zinc concentration difference between the two lines was approximately 15 ppm. We also analyzed the concentrations of LA to DGLA ratio, the LA and DGLA, I'm sorry, LA and DGLA concentrations in the wheat flour, and there were no significant differences. With that, we moved forward with our diets that we tested in vivo, specifically diets that were tailored to the target population, which was Central Asia, chapati bread-based diets, and that consisted on 75% wheat. And the concentration of the zinc in the diets that were assessed were 46.5 and 32.8 high and low, respectively. We moved forward with our in vivo analysis. This was a feeding trial that lasted for 6 weeks. On a weekly basis, we have collected blood samples and documented body weight, and in the end, we've collected the relevant tissue samples for further analysis. And I will start with the physiological parameters that were assessed. The most basic one, again, the zinc serum concentrations, significant differences as of day 14 of the study and throughout the study. Again, under these control conditions, this should be expected. And in the end, feather and nail zinc concentration parallel to human hair and nail zinc concentration as a zinc status indicators. Again, significant differences indicating that the biofortified group held or had an improved zinc status relative to the control. The expression of, again, spectrum of different proteins that are relevant to zinc metabolism, primarily proteins that are relevant, again, to zinc transporter, suggested that it was a gene expression upregulation of all of them in the low group relative to the high, and this is an adaptation of the tissue to the lower zinc bioavailability that was presented to that group. The expression of delta-6 desaturase, the enzyme that converts LA into DGLA, as expected, was downregulated in this group. And indeed, when we looked into this ratio, it was significantly higher at the low group or the control group starting at day 14 of the study and maintained throughout and again until the conclusion of the study. And this suggests that we can, again, use this as part of the index of zinc status. So these findings were recently published by a review paper that we wrote. And further, what we were interested to test is how the consumption of zinc by fortified wheat will affect the gut microbiota composition and function. And again, by using next-generation sequencing techniques, and this is, again, beta diversity as an indicator of how similar subjects are within treatment group in terms of their microbial profile. Again, the clustering that we're seeing in the zinc biofortified group relative to a less clustered pattern in the control, suggesting that this population is healthier. When we, again, looked into the more specific level of analysis, we're able to identify a fourfold increase in lactobacilli genera, which again is associated with health promoting effects. The last parameter that was measured are some morphometric measurements. Villous surface area is a representation of the digestive and absorptive surface in the intestine. Again, we did not see any significant differences. What we did see is an increase in the goblet cell number numbers per villi. The goblet cells are producing and secreting the mucus that coats the intestinal lumen and highly interacts with the brush border membrane functionality, but also with the microbial population. And this was in agreement with what was previously shown, that zinc deficiency lowers or affects the proliferation of intestinal goblet cells. So with that, I would like to conclude. Again, we are trying to establish a zinc deficiency index that will consist on these three factors: gene expression of relevant proteins, the LA to DGLA ratio, and the intestinal microbial population. And again, to use that to improve dietary zinc bioavailability and biofortification outcomes. So again, to conclude, it appears that the in vivo screening approach is cost-effective, it's reliable, it's fast, and allows tailoring and assessing zinc bioavailability in a specific diet. This approach, with its wide spectrum of parameters, physiological, molecular, and microbiome, can predict human efficacy biofortification studies outcomes. Of course, further development of the zinc deficiency index is needed, and especially in the context of the LA to DGLA ratio as a key biomarker. I would like to thank my colleagues and collaborators and my team, and of course to thank you for your attention. Thank you very much.
We have time for a question.
Yes. Yes. James is going to mention this tomorrow in his presentation, so he will give more information as far as, you know, the wheat background, etc. Yes.
I'm curious about, so it looks like there's a growing body of support for this DGLA biomarker. Are there any founders of this? Are there any other stress factors, pathogenic or other nutritional issues that also will alter this ratio?
This is a great question. I don't know yet. I mean, it looks like we're able to use it as part of a spectrum of other biomarkers and not just by itself. And that's the challenge with zinc. With iron, it's very easy. You can test hemoglobin, and this gives you a really good idea of what is the iron status of the subject. This is not the case with zinc. With any biomarker that is used, it needs to be part of a spectrum of biomarkers. So I'm not suggesting that the LA2-DGLA is the only biomarker. It needs to be in context of others.
Yes, Karen. If you were to compare zinc bioavailability and iron bioavailability, would you say zinc is going to relate more to the concentration than iron would? Or?
I don't think that there is enough information with specifically zinc. This is basically the wheat study that I'm presenting here is the first indication. Or the first study that we've conducted with zinc biofortified materials. So I don't think that there is enough information at this point.
So my perspective as a wheat geneticist is that I would like to be able to test 1,000 lines between July 1st and August 15th, and I'd like to provide the lab 40 grams of sample.
Mm-hmm.
What do I do?
To provide
a screen for a high bioavailable wheat
for iron or zinc,
iron,
anything,
zinc, minerals,
right,
at that kind of throughput,
right,
with 40 grams of sample, 6
okay
weeks. What do I do?
So what you need to do is to contact us and to provide the samples that you are interested in. The advantage of the in vitro model is that it allows the screening of hundreds of samples. It's very cheap, it's very fast, and it's very reliable because we're measuring ferritin synthesis as an indicator of iron bioavailability. Ferritin is the major cellular iron storage unit, so the information is very reliable, and it is provided very fast. Once we have the most promising line, and if you have enough material for a long-term feeding trial, then we can certainly conduct such study. It's important that with the samples that you're sending for the initial step, it needs to be a sample that is representative of the material that you're interested in. And then once we select the promising line, it again depends on the dietary strategy that we choose to take. In this case, the study that I was discussing today, we need around 30 kilograms of material.
So you're now at the point where we could make breeding decisions on my small samples in real time with the KCO2 type model.
I believe so, and this is something that Ray has been showing for a while.
And this is really a good question for all the whole group to think about. You may not need to do all of the samples, okay? You may be able to find a smaller subset of your streams that would warrant testing. Now, we exhausted pretty much, I think, over the past 10, 12 years for zinc bioavailability. The in vitro methodology just doesn't seem to work. We tried methylthionine formation. We tried other approaches. And the problem is, when there's any fighting acid at all in that in vitro digest, the zinc bioavailability just isn't enough for the paper suits as test. I think we have some new alternatives with some of the work that we're doing in vitro now, modifying this method and maybe getting rid of the dialysis membrane approach, but that's still a ways off. But that's essentially why we had to develop an in vivo approach and a panel of markers. And that's really superior because it gives you an idea whether there's compensation going. non-physiologically, in addition to, overall, the panel's going to be much more divided. But to answer your question, Mary, we don't have to look at a whole group. You may be able to boil that down instead of 800 to...
But that's 800 is four populations of 200. That's a very, Mike's nodding his head, that's a very reasonable expectation for me as a breeder to need for a first cut screening to identify those. I can't identify the extremes that you need on any less than that.
And another key point with wheat is I would break it down between whole wheat and your extracted flour,
right,
and look at what's in the other stuff. Because the one thing that I've seen from screening hundreds of samples, different locations over the years, is the more of iron and zinc you can get into the endosperm, there's a general trend there.
But that's a function of the millability, too, that depending on how well the grain fills, you'll have better endosperm separation. And that's dicey, because you may think you're looking at white flour and you're really not looking at a great flour, because if you're coming out of a low test weight environment, or your flour mill's not set right, or the lab didn't temper the sample right before milling, heaven knows what you have in that flour sample, that white flour sample. You know, there are a lot of factors in that. So I guess for me as a breeder, I would send you a whole grain sample, and let's do that as a first cut and tell me what I've got.
And you know, it's just important to remember, just because you have a high content in a whole grain doesn't mean you're going to deliver more available
mineral. Other questions for? Okay. We have one.
Along the same line, how many chickens do you need?
Yeah.
To run a valid test.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, great question. So we usually have about 15 birds per treatment group, and this is sufficient for with the material. The amount that we need would be around 30 kilograms of the material that you wish to assess, and this is sufficient for a 6 weeks study.
So how big is the hen house to do that screen?
How big is the hen house?
The hen house.
It's not very big. So we are very lucky because we are located on the Cornell campus, and we use the state-of-the-art poultry facility that they have. And these are environmental controlled rooms. So we're just using one room for, you know, the study that we need. It's not very big. Well, we start. Say that again.
Is there an alternative?
You can use the rodent model if this is something that is relevant. We just don't believe that the rodent model is the right model, or the pig model, which will require so much more food. In terms of the amount of material that you are able to provide and the length, the duration of the study, we can adjust that. So if you have much less than 30 kilograms, again, depends on the study. It depends on the dietary strategies that you wish to take that is relevant to the target population. We can, of course, just adjust the quantities. Yes?
In your experience with various grains, do you find that the grains that are higher in iron bioavailability are also higher in zinc bioavailability, or is there no relation?
Well, in this study that I was presenting with wheat, so yes. The iron content was also elevated in the biofortified wheat lines. And there was another wheat study that we have conducted, and the in vivo approach that was taken was not a long-term feeding trial, but in ovo administration, because the amount that the breeder was able to provide were very limited. And over there was also an elevation of both factors in the biofortified lines, yes.
For your other crops now, there hasn't been enough, we haven't had the same biofortified.
Right.
This is very
new. The paper is now under review, and this is the first demonstration of zinc biofortified material to affect or to improve zinc status in vivo.
So I'd like to, two announcements. First, I would like to make sure to encourage everybody in this room to select C9 as their division of choice, or a division of choice, in their membership with the Crop Science Society of America. I'd like to thank again all of the speakers and Ray for the wonderful presentations. And we're going to take a short break, and then we have a short a 5-minute introduction to a poster presentation that will happen, and then Om Prakash is going to present his paper related to arsenic and rice, right? Correct? Yes. In this room in a few moments. So with that, let's thank the speakers and Ray for their work on this presentation.